Welcome to Wise and Worthy, a branded podcast from Worthy, dedicated to celebrating people like you as you navigate separation, divorce, and life after divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon. Did you know that your unused bridal set, luxury watch, or other diamond jewelry could be a hidden financial asset that helps you with that fresh start? But where do you begin? That's where Worthy comes in. Worthy offers a seamless solution by partnering with you to help sell your jewelry and get the best deal for your piece. Our quick and easy process means less work for you and more money when you sell. Visit Worthy.com to learn more. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Wise and Worthy. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. And today's episode is about pivoting from a people-pleasing parent to a purpose-driven parent. And with me today is a colleague and friend, Mickey Gardner. Welcome, Mickey.
Hi, thank you. I'm excited to be here and to see you today.
I am thrilled about today's conversation too. So co-parenting post-divorce can be difficult, especially when you first step away from emotionally charged divorce negotiations and into a cooperative new parenting dynamic. And some of you may be parallel parenting rather than co-parenting. How our co-parenting experience unfolds will depend somewhat on how your co-parent behaves, but you have little to no control over that. It largely depends on your perspective and behavior and what you bring to the table. Today's guest lives and works in the co-parenting space and has noticed and addressed the difficulties that arise when those of us with people-pleasing tendencies enter this co-parenting dynamic. We'll be speaking today about her new book, The People Pleaser's Guide to Co-Parenting Well, which reveals how to prioritize peacekeeping may hinder your ability to co-parent successfully. Her book provides a simple framework for shifting into being an intentional, in control, and purpose-driven parent. But before we dive in, a little about our guest, Mickey Gardner. She's a certified life and conscious parenting coach, a mom, speaker, and host of her own podcast, Co-Parenting with Confidence, author of The People Pleaser's Guide to Co-Parenting Well. Mickey strives to guide moms to navigate the divorce and co-parenting drama by becoming calm, confident co-parents, even without their ex's participation, and she's on a mission to help children by helping their moms learn to handle the emotional and practical difficulties of divorce and co-parenting while creating an intentional, joyful, and ease-filled life for both themselves and their children. I love that mission. Welcome, Mickey.
Thank you. Wow, that was a big introduction. Thank you. I'm excited to talk about this. I love all things co-parenting. And as a recovering people pleaser, this is a topic I know and talk about often and love, hence the book. So thanks for the opportunity today.
Yes, I am in the same recovering group as you. So let's dive in. I'm sure we'll both have some personal stories to tell as well. So can you just give our listeners a little background of how you ended up in this co-parenting space?
Yeah. So I did not go into adulthood and marriage and parenting intending to end up here. I don't think anyone does, right? It's not a path we choose, but it was the path I quickly found myself on when, I was one of those people that really thought if I controlled everything and if I kept everybody happy, that I would be happy. And I checked every box, did everything that was supposed to make a happy, perfect life. And in what felt like an instant, the marriage that I thought I had was clearly no longer. And I found myself really at a rock bottom place that I it was a long journey. I'll sum it up, right? I'm going to make it sound like it was really short and simple. But our marriage wasn't something that I could continue to be part of. And so for me, I made the decision that I was going to ask for a divorce and that we were going to figure out how to be a family in two houses. This was really sort of my goal at the beginning. I had no idea how to do it. This was 10 years ago. Oh my gosh, I can't even right now believe it's been that long. 10 years ago. And while there was information, there wasn't as much information, I don't think, as there is now, at so many resources, people talking about it. For me, you know, no one in my family had been divorced except maybe the random cousin on the other side that we just don't talk about. Right. And, you know, I grew up with my grandmother always whispering, oh, they're from a broken home, you know, like those kind of things. And I had no friends that were divorced. Right. I was in my mid-30s and my son was, you know, 3-4 years old. I didn't know anybody. And I really felt a lot of shame around it. I felt a lot of failure. But being the people pleaser and the perfectionist that I was, I strapped on my big girl pants and decided I'm going to make the best of this and I'm going to kill it, right? I'm going to co-parent the heck out of this thing. And so I took that really take charge, controlling energy and went headfirst into how are we going to do this? Luckily for me, I wasn't in a super high conflict. I was in a very emotional divorce. There was a lot of betrayal. There were a lot of emotions left. I won't get into the details, but you know, there was just a lot of complexity, hurt feelings, anger that we had to work through that took years. Yeah. So I'm grateful for him. And I've told him that I'm grateful that we could be on the same team-ish as we sort of ventured out into this. But what I quickly realized is I didn't know what I didn't know. And because I felt so much shame around the divorce and the quote unquote failure of the marriage, I didn't seek help. I really just decided I'm going to do this all on my own. Mm-hmm. And my people pleasing and my controlling and my perfectionism really did me a disservice and created years of more pain, more suffering, more mistakes. And it wasn't until I really started to understand there's people out here, right? Like I had been in therapy much of my life and I love therapy, but nobody was talking about sort of this. And then I discovered life coaching and it was like a whole world opened up, right? And then conscious parenting coaching, which was a whole nother world because I had a quote unquote strong-willed child. You know, that's what we like to define the ones that aren't easy to parent.
Right, right.
And so through all of these journeys, I really found that the more that I did the work on myself to learn how to become aware of what was going on, what choices I had available to me, and how I could really take control over what I had control over, which is me and nobody else, everything started to shift. And that's where I really developed this passion that all I wanted was for my son to not be affected by our divorce. They are affected by our divorce in the best of circumstances, right? But in the worst of circumstances, they're really affected. And I just wanted to help him and I really want to help children. But I know to do that, we help moms first and foremost, right? And I work with dads too. I always cut the dads out. I love you dads, right? Like they're doing it too, some of them. But I really want to help moms learn how to really engage and empower themselves to create a harmonious environment, no matter what their ex is doing. Because when we really learn how to turn that key and unlock that door, everything shifts.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. And so your son was 3-4 years old when you mm-hmm. started the process. Yeah.
So when we didn't separate for, I think, 6 or 8 months, we, you know, tried to keep the marriage together, which was all unto itself, a whole feat that didn't work. But he was 3 or 4, mm-hmm. when that happened. And he's now 13. He's going to be 14. So I got a lot of years under my belt of co-parenting. And I, again, made all the mistakes, which is why I love being a coach and mentor now, because there were so many of them that were avoidable. Yeah. Right. There's so many that aren't, and we got to go through that and we have to learn, but there's so many that are. And that's where I find with the people pleasing, you know, we really do sort of set ourselves up for disaster, for more mess with this whole concept of people pleasing, right? Which we are just ingratiated into, right? And so that's why it really came out as something that I wanted to talk about.
So before we dive into the book and why you wrote the book, can you give our listeners your definition of people pleasing?
Yeah. So people pleasing is essentially when we are trying to keep the peace, keep everyone around us sort of happy at the detriment of ourselves. Right. So it's like we're trying to keep the peace, but we're actually never experiencing any.
That actually is the definition that I got early on my divorce, and it blew me over. I was like, wow, I'm trying to keep the peace. I'm trying to keep the peace. And someone said to me, and how much peace do you have in your heart while you're trying to keep the peace?
Right.
I was actually trying to keep him peaceful.
Yes. And that's what we're trying to do.
It was a jaw dropper for me. It was like a mic drop. I was like, oh my God, that is not keeping the peace. So I love the way you described it.
Yeah. And the root cause of people pleasing is essentially, when we really boil it down, is our own inability to be with the uncomfortable feelings that we're having. When we don't think that we can handle the uncomfortableness of our ex being difficult, of our children having a hard time, of someone rejecting us, any of those things, we go into people pleasing mode, right? But it's not about the other person. It's more essentially deep down about our own ability to handle these emotions. And the one thing I want to say as a disclaimer here, I think people pleasers are amazing humans. We're awesome. Everybody loves us, right? We are really helpful. We're so loving. We're accommodating. We get all the things done for all the people. And we're in this very much society and this culture, right, that raises women to be people pleasers. Be accommodating. Be helpful. Don't have needs. Be a good girl. Be quiet. Look this way. Do this, right? So we've actually been conditioned to do it. And people pleasing in and of itself, because people will say to me, so what, Mickey, I'm not supposed to be helpful or accommodating? No, absolutely. But there's a shadow side of it. And that's where we have to be careful when we're prioritizing pleasing other people at the expense of yourself. And that is where I think, especially in divorce and co-parenting, we see it, and I'm sure you do with your clients, if I just figure out how to say it the right way, if I just do this one thing for him, then he'll give it to me in return. If I'm nice this time, then he'll be nice to me next time. Yeah. But it's not how it works.
The other thing that I learned early on in my walk is that when I put someone else's needs before mine, I'm actually abandoning myself.
Correct.
As opposed to committing to myself and loving myself. And so for me, that was another big aha, because it's like, you don't think about it that way. But if you're saying yes to everybody else and their needs, then you're saying no to somebody, and that would be you.
Yeah.
So, So talk to us a little bit about how this book came about.
Yeah. So this is, again, a theme that I just kept seeing over and over, certainly in my own life, with my girlfriends, people I talked to, but with almost all of my clients, including the men. They're not left out of this conversation.
Absolutely
either, right?
Not. Yeah.
And it really is, we're so, I think, you know, we fall into a couple camps, because oftentimes we don't want to be conflictual. We don't want to create more drama, or we've been through so much. We just want to kind of, you know, I just want it to be done. Right. So we sort of end up, again, sacrificing ourselves. But when we're really so concentrated on trying to keep that peace, we inevitably aren't keeping our own. And this is where we have to stop living on this autopilot reactionary place and start really taking 100% responsibility for the situation. And the way that I define responsibility is slightly different, and that I think it's response hyphen ability. It is your ability to respond to life. And as long as we are in this autopilot, just trying to keep the peace, just reacting to whatever is happening, just being triggered, just being outraged, we don't have the ability to really respond and choose the course that we're going to take, choose the direction that we're going to go. And so that's why I really wanted to talk about this, because I teach in my own private practice a very simple framework, not easy, but a simple framework, because all of the actual universal truths in life, as we know, are simple.
Doesn't mean they're easy. They're both they're simple and not easy often.
Oh, they are simple and torture, right? They're so hard. And so, but inevitably, we end up making so much more mess for ourselves when we're focused on trying to fix everything outside. And when we actually learn to keep and create our own peace from a place of groundedness, from a place of responsibility, we actually have so much less mess to clean up on our side of the street. It's like co-parenting is whether you're married, whether you're divorced, it's a two-lane highway. You get one side, they get the other. You're not responsible for their side of the highway. You're responsible for yours, right? And so the cleaner you keep it, the easier it is for you to move forward. And we don't have to wait for the other person, right? This is where I tell people, you don't have to wait for your ex to participate, to agree with you, to reciprocate, for you to start to create the life and the parenting style that you want.
Yeah, and
they can make it difficult. They can. I'm not negating that.
Yeah.
But you have more power than you think.
And it's very liberating and empowering to know that you don't have to do this dance you've been doing of waiting for or controlling or getting the other person on board. I love that. I'm curious, before we go into solution, how does people pleasing, in your perspective, impact the children?
That's such a beautiful question. So one of the things that I think is so important, and I remind people often, is that, you know, everybody wants to be an influencer these days, right? It's like what our children want to do. They just want to be a YouTuber or whatever. I say start in your own home, right? Be the influencer in your own home, because we are constantly treating people or teaching people how to treat us, but we are actually the living, breathing, walking example to our children of what it looks like to be a mom or a dad, a wife or an ex-wife, a partner, a friend, an adult, right? All of these things. And so when you are showing them that you don't value yourself, that you put other people in, you know, over you, what is the message that you're sending your kid? They're then going to think, well, I should do that, right? Absolutely. I'm not as valuable as the next person. But what we do when we are people pleasing, right? When we feel responsible for how other people feel, when we're quick to just agree so that we don't have a conflict, or we do things even when we don't want to, like you were talking about, all of these things, we start to create a lot of resentment, a lot of bitterness. And that is something that you cannot control how that comes out. And people, and children especially, feel that energy off of you. And so I always tell my clients, people listen to what, you know, it's like, what is that quote? I can't remember who it is, but people remember how you make them feel, not what you say. So your children are really watching your actions, watching your energy, watching your behaviors. They're not listening to a damn thing you say. Right. And so when we're people pleasing, we have to really ask ourselves, is that the example? Is this how I want them to think that this is how you adult, this is how you're in a relationship? And I think, you know, it just took me back full circle, is the night that I decided to leave my marriage, I was on the side of the highway in tears. It was like late at night. We had just, I was at my husband's restaurant, ex-husband's restaurant. We had gone into another fight from 0 to 60 in like 0.2 seconds. And I was like, how did we get here? Right. But I was sobbing on the side of the road, and I heard a voice clear as day say, is this what you want Leland to see as a wife and a mother?
Wow.
And I remember I said, no, no, not at all. And I knew in that moment, this is what I was saying, that this is, if I stay, if this is what I'm doing, then this is what I am teaching him. And this is what I'm saying you should want in a wife.
Right.
And no. And so really from that point, it became a very pivotal point that I come back to often is the reminder, is this who I want to be for him?
Right.
Is this the example I want to be? And I think that's what we have to ask ourselves. And when we're willing to get really honest, our peace, that is what we are here to create, is our own internal peace, which is the divine right that we have. And so how can we start to actually embody that and be the most beautiful example for our children? Because I think that's the greatest gift we can give them.
Moving past divorce is hard enough without your old engagement ring staring you in the eye every time you open your jewelry box. With Worthy, you have a selling partner you can trust who will help you transform your ring from a symbol of the past into a financial asset to help you start over. Worthy takes care of everything from insurance coverage to secure shipping, professional grading, and more. So when you're ready to sell, visit worthy.com. We're ready when you are. Divorce is like a foreign land filled with unfamiliar rules and jargon and pressure to make complex decisions that will impact the rest of your life. Don't go it alone. Go to rapidreliefcall.com and get the support and guidance you need. That sounds beautiful. And I'm so big on breaking generational chains. And it's like, if you don't change your behavior to a healthier behavior, then you're going to watch your children grow up. They're going to marry the same kind of thing. They're going to struggle in the same kind of way. And then you have so little power to help them. But now, while they're still young or even emerging adults, you have so much more power. So I love that. The other thing that came to mind, Mickey, as you were speaking, is if the people pleasing is toward the children as well, you know, it's such a double-edged sword, because you might be taking care of their fussing or suffering in the moment, but you could be creating selfishness and entitlement. Be an expectation, because now they're expecting, oh, mom will do this if I do that type thing.
Yeah. So here's what, because that's always the argument is like, we essentially are people pleasers, right? And to be a quote unquote good mom, you're going to be a people pleaser, right? And there's nothing wrong with it. But the question to ask yourself is always to stop and listen to your body, not your head, right? How do I feel when I do this? When we have the littles, and they're like a disaster, and we can actually stop and not do something to help them regulate themselves, to get through something. You know what? I'd never walked away going, oh, that was, yeah, you know, like, right, no, right. I would actually feel like good, because I was being the mom I wanted to be. So when we stop and sink into our body and ask, how does it make me feel? Not what does it make me think, but how do I feel in my body? Now, if I have that tightness in my chest, or that like where my shoulders are hurting from the resentment and the anger that's building up, okay, that's your signal. You're probably people pleasing to the detriment of yourself. And those are the moments. And listen, my kid's 13 and he is entitled to all get out, right? Like, I'm trying my best to not, you know, create a, you know what, I think we all are. It's hard.
Yeah.
Right. And it's okay. But I have to remind myself, how am I feeling in this moment? And there are times, and I find myself doing it more and more, where I realize I've walked down the people-pleasing road and I am doing it, right? And I'll say to him, I don't actually feel good about this. And so I'm going to stop and we're going to go a different direction. And then he gets really upset, right, about it. Or I'll say, you know what? I agreed to this. I'm going to do it. But just to let you know, I don't feel good about this. But I'm going to honor my word here, right? And just those like simple things of being aware, which is in the framework, the first thing I teach is the more awareness we have, And awareness is really that ability to understand what's happening in our body versus just what's happening in our head. The more we become aware and attuned to how we're feeling, the more agency we have, which is the second step, which is just choices, right? We don't feel like we have to do something or we have no choice, which we all love to say. We always have a choice,
right?
So even when we're people pleasing, even when we're putting their needs in front of us, I sometimes say to them, you know what? You're my kid. I want you to have what you need here. And so I'm not going to do this. I'm going to do this. And that makes me feel better.
And what I love about your approach, Mickey, is it's flexible. It's like each person gets to determine what are my values? Where do I draw my line? And yet the other thing that you're talking about is that going from reactive to responsive, going from autopilot to conscious and intentional. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the world is just getting more and more complicated for us to be able to raise our children from a conscious and intentional place, which will teach them to be conscious and intentional. That's only going to serve them in the long run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, our the best thing that we can do, again, knowing that that root cause of people pleasing is really our own inability to sit with the unease or the discomfort in our body. That is the skill that we need to learn as adults so that we can show that to our children, because they have all of those disappointments, right? They have all of those things happening, and our ability to show them that we can do it and then teach it to them. This is how you don't raise a, you know what?
Right.
Their ability to be able to handle these things.
Right. And to learn how to regulate themselves, which is what I'm hearing you say as a parent, if you're slowing it down and you're paying attention to your body and you're regulating your own emotions. What a beautiful thing to teach young people.
Absolutely. And especially, I feel like this is really useful when we're talking about co-parenting, when these children are having to navigate, like, childhood is hard enough, but when you're having to navigate two different houses, two sets of rules, two different parents, like, and if there's conflict and other things on top of that, it is so much for them. Right. And so the more that we can teach them to be able to understand and become aware of what's going on so that they can regulate themselves, so that they can have those skills to be able to navigate what's going on, whether it's your house or the other house. Right. It's so important for them. And it's not about saying, like, you know what, the other co-parent is so difficult and they're making everything harder and blah, 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 blah. But it's really saying, well, okay, well, how do you feel when these things are happening? What can you do for yourself to feel more grounded, to not get upset, or to handle the feelings that you're feeling? Mm-hmm. Right. And to be that safe space for your children because they need it.
And my children, so my divorce was 2006. My kids were 5 and 7 or something when I moved out. So they're 25 and 27. And it makes an immense difference when you focus on the child, because you're also building trust and communication and a relationship that can last a lifetime. And I've seen in my practice people who, you know, unwittingly, you know, they're bashing the other parent. So now they're not a safe person to come to when the child has a problem with the other parent, because it's just stepping into more conflict. And so I love your approach. I love everything you're saying. Can you leave our listeners with perhaps a couple of baby steps? So let's say someone's listening and they're like, you just nailed me. Perfectionist, people pleaser.
Yeah.
How does someone be, they can absolutely get your book, let them know where they can get your book, but what are a couple of baby steps that they can take to pivot to a better way of parenting?
So I'll say the sort of, you know, one of the things is that we really do have to get out of this reaction, this autopilot mode, right? And when we are a people pleaser or just a human, we get triggered, right? And nobody can trigger us better than the other co-parent. I mean, come on, they've had like the masterclass in how to trigger you. And some of them really enjoy doing it, right? And if we're a people pleaser and we're just trying to figure out like that perfect thing to say, or like, why do they always do this? Or maybe if I can just argue it this way, right? That cycle we got to step out of. And this is where we've got to get out of reaction and into responsibility, right? Again, that ability to respond. So I'm going to use one that I see over and over and over and over again, which is, I call it the nasty gram cycle, right? It's like the text. I don't know when text became the sole communication for people. Apparently, this is how we communicate now. Text is for, did Johnny have his soccer equipment? Like, or, you know, what did they eat for dinner last night? Like, text is not for conversation yet, right? Because you can't, there's no inflection. There's no understanding of what's behind it. It's just, it's too complicated. Yet here we go. We all do it. Totally fine. So the next time you find yourself in that, where maybe you send a nice note, did Johnny have his soccer stuff in the bag at school? And the co-parent sends you back, I can't believe you did that. You always blame me. You're the worst person, right? And they go off. And so here we are, we get triggered. We're like, oh my gosh, how did they do that? No, that's not what I meant, right? And you start texting. And then, oh my gosh, you are such an idiot, blah, 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 blah. And then you're like, oh, heck no, right? And then you jump in. Now we're in the spiral, the downward spiral of nasty grams. As soon as you realize you're triggered, I don't care if it's text one or text 501. As soon as you realize in your body that you have been triggered, that you are in the cycle, you stop. You take 3 deep breaths in and out, right? Breathing is what keeps us alive. It's also what helps us regulate our nervous system. So we've got to calm ourselves down so that we can become, right? It's, you realize you're triggered. So you've got awareness. You've got the first step. Our second step, again, is agency, right? This is where you decide the choices you have available to you. The great news is that the universe made it super easy. We only get 3. You can accept something without anger or resentment. You can change it, not change it, but can you change something? Or you can leave it. So in this one, right, and I'll make this brief, you probably can't accept that the other person is attacking you via text. I don't want to accept it, right? So that one's off the table. Can you change it? No, you can't change what they're doing, right? So that leaves you with number 3. And that means you leave it. This doesn't mean you just like cower and hide away or anything else, but you say, I'm triggered. I'm going to leave. And you get to take the third step, which is aligned action. Meaning, what is the action that I'm going to take that's going to align me in the direction that I want to go, how I want to live, what my values are. And it might look something like, I am not going to engage in disrespectful texting. Let me know, you know, when you're ready to tell me about the soccer equipment. Off you go. Pause notification. Leave the text stream. Nothing is going to get said that needs to be said there, right? And it's that learning how to do that over and over and over again. And then you cut, then you bring on, right, getting the help of a coach or a therapist to learn how to calm your nervous system, how you learn to really get the tools that you need to be able to take care of yourself and co-parent really, really well. I mean, it's like really having the wellness as a human to be able to do that. But it starts with just the awareness I've been triggered. And then how do I want to show up differently? Because you either keep doing the same thing, right? And you know where that leads, or we got to do something different. And so I'm really a proponent of learning how to become aware, accept the agency that you do have, because you always have a choice, and then take aligned action in the direction you want to go.
I love that. And without that awareness, you're in that autopilot, and you know, and then you feel like you have no agency because you feel like a puppy and puppet, and they're pulling on your strings. And it's so funny because I'll often say to my clients, it's like you're sitting in a prison. The key to the prison door is sitting right there next to you, and you're feeling like you're stuck, and you have the agency. We just need to help you get clear about it. And your step approach is so beautiful to realize that I do have this agency. And the other thing that came to mind while you were speaking is we don't have to accept every invitation to every fight that we're invited into.
My favorite quote I ever heard. I don't know who said it, but it was brilliant, right? Like, we don't.
No, it's just walk away.
It's liberation. Yeah.
And the cell phone is such an interesting thing. You know, it's like, put down the phone, step away, breathe, give some space and time. Love, love, love those suggestions.
Yeah. I always laugh because, you know, the other person who can trigger you is your kid, right?
Yes.
Like they are, oh my gosh, they are just here to trigger you. And so I always love, you know, I'll be in an argument with my 13-year-old. I don't know if you, I know you have argued with a 13-year-old boy.
Oh yeah.
It's like you are in an alternate universe where I don't even know how we get there, but I'm in it. I'm arguing, I'm doing all the things, and I'll realize I've done it, right? And I'll actually like laugh or say something. I'll be like, ha ha, ha ha. Nope, not this time. He's like, oh my God, mom, really? And I'm like, nope, I'm not. And it's like the awareness came. Yeah. Now I have a choice. And he always, you know, he's like, you're doing the weird breathing thing again, or you're doing the weird laughing thing again. But, you know, for me, it's like victory.
Yeah.
Because I'm out of it. Right.
I'm going
a different direction.
You feel yourself stepping onto the slippery slope, but before you slide, you realize it and you go, oh, I'm not going there. And that's beautiful. And I remember when my son was complex. He was definitely, what was the word you used for challenging?
Oh, we call them strong-willed now.
Yes. Yes. So my son was rather strong-willed. I thought, I remember saying to him once, you better become an attorney because you are just like depleting
my kid every day. Yes.
But there's so much power in that. And then having older children, having children in their 20s, a few benefits that I've experienced is, number one, they'll come back to me with beautiful awareness and advice, like of me. They'll be like, hey, mom, I've noticed. And then they're like reflecting healthy, positive words back to me, which let me tell you, that is just one of the greatest prizes. And then to see them be able to navigate the other parent and just look, there's difficult people out there. So if you have a difficult co-parent, helping your children understand how to navigate that and navigate the co-parenting dynamic is only going to help them out in the world.
1,000%, because they're going to have to learn how to navigate difficult people. And I think the one thing I want to say, because I think it's important for that mom that's listening, that's saying like, no, my kids have a really difficult situation over here.
Yep.
Children need one parent.
Amen.
One who is a safe, loving, respectful place where they can land. Your only job is not to change the other person, is to make sure you are that person. Not every kid gets one, right? But all a kid needs is one. And so your only job is to be that one for them.
And I would say for those who might feel guilty or shameful for even being in this single parenting situation, there's a lot of people who spend their lives together and one of the parents is difficult. And so here it's like you have such a beautiful opportunity to become your best self and then pay it forward into the next generation.
Absolutely.
And I love, Mickey, what you do. I love the way you speak about the challenges. Can you share the name of your book, where people can find it, and how else they can find you as well?
Oh, thank you. Yes, I realize there's a lot of peas in this sucker, but it's the People Pleaser's Guide to Co-Parenting Well, How to Stop Playing Peacekeeper and Start Parenting Peacefully. It's anywhere online books are sold, Amazon, all the places. So you can just Google it. But my name is Mickey, M-I-K-K-I, Gardner, and that's my website, that's my Instagram, it's all the things. That's where I hang out. And I do have, I did create, which I would love to share with your audience, I created a companion workbook, which is probably too robust, but I threw everything in the kitchen sink in this sucker because I was so excited about it. That really is a companion workbook going along with the chapters in the book. So if you just DM me a picture of you with the book or a picture of the receipt of you purchasing the book, I will send you the downloadable version at no cost as a gift from me. So because I think, you know, it's reading something, but again, embodying. We can be in our heads, but we've got to really learn to embody and step into our body and learn how to use the tools. And so that's where I think the workbook is really useful.
Yeah, absolutely. If it just stays between your ears, it's just not nearly enough.
Mm-mm.
So we have all of Mickey's contact information in the show notes, and go out and grab that book if you're co-parenting and have even a little bit of people pleasing. It's going to just help you so much. Mickey, thank you so much for what you do in the world. And thank you for coming and speaking to our listeners.
Well, Karen, I really admire you and all the work you're doing, and you are helping so many families. And so I'm just really grateful for you and this opportunity.
Thank you. And we'll be back again real soon with another episode of Wise and Worthy. Until then, you take care. Thanks for listening to Wise and Worthy, a branded podcast. Worthy is a selling partner you can trust to help you get the best deal possible on your diamond jewelry. Visit worthy.com to learn more and get started. If you have questions about an episode, compliments you'd like to share, or would like to be a guest, please email us at podcast@worthy.com.